So you were saying that Genevieve is here and is waiting? You're Genevieve.
Oh.
You know, all this time, I don't think I've actually ever remembered your name, and now I feel real bad.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. How's your hope been so far?
A little more interesting than I hoped. So
a little more interesting?
Yeah, just, I am looking forward to what will pretend to be a decent night's sleep tonight.
Decent night's sleep sounds really good. Yeah, I'd agree with that. You wanted to come on and talk a bit about Free Geek, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So you work with Free Geek Vancouver, right?
Yes.
All right, and that's your full-time job, or is it?
Yes, it is. That's my current day job.
All right, awesome. So how'd you get involved?
I've been involved with Free Geek for a while. I originally am from Chicago. I have done some minor work with that organization over the years. When I moved up to Vancouver, I found out about FGV and I started with volunteering with them, and then a job opening came up and I applied, and that's where I am now. What I was doing as a volunteer, I helped with a couple of a couple of drives to collect e-waste and some of the dismantling and testing.
All right. So, how satisfying is it to know that you're helping make computing more accessible for people?
It's part of my job that I really like. We live in a time where everyone needs access to technology. I mean, to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, most banking is on. Class, university and high school, sometimes even grade school classes are online. Banking is online. Interacting with your government is online.
Yeah.
One of the main goals is to ensure that individuals that otherwise lack access can get machines that work for them. I don't know what that's called.
What is that?
I have no idea.
It's very loud. I'm gonna go. You guys have a conversation? Keep
sure.
Asking. Talk
about. Well, what I was gonna start with was, do you want to tell the people what it is that your organization does?
Sure.
I mean,
what Free Geek does is reclaim e-waste in an ethical manner. I mean, think of it this way. Whatever is the new shiny that somebody has now, you know, they're going to tire of it. They want to get the newer, shinier thing. What do they do with the old one? With the old thing? In a lot of places, they'll just toss it. Some places have laws or regs that prohibit that, but a lot of the times, when you quote unquote recycle old tech, it just basically goes through a crusher or somebody that's trying to reclaim just whatever precious metals are in there. And there's still so much life in this old tech.
I agree with you totally. And that's what I was going to ask you. The next question was going to be is, what's the difference between taking my stuff to an e-recycler versus what you do? And I understand that you guys add a lot of value to this and try to prolong the life of the equipment and get it to people who normally wouldn't have access to this. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of people that do not have access for whatever, you know, particularly for socioeconomic reasons. But then again, you've also, so if you've got, again, like I said, you need tech in a lot of places to start interacting with your government. For instance, if you're trying to imagine someone's applying for, let's say, welfare benefits in New York State, they pretty much have to start with ny.gov, or at least some domain there. So one thing we do is, I mean, we reclaim a lot of tech, stuff that works. We keep it going, particularly with the use of Linux and other open source and free software. And we provide it to individuals in need, to charitable organizations, to schools, stuff that's a little bit higher spec. Most free geek organizations have a thrift store, which offers tech at really good prices.
So typically then, are you staffed by volunteers that come in and assist in this rejuvenating of the older equipment?
Absolutely. Volunteers are pretty much a lifeblood of this of a Free Geek. I mean, we receive a lot of contributions of hardware. I mean, our volunteers, I mean, in addition to, for example, I mean, the process of dismantling, testing, building, a lot of that is done by volunteers. It also provides opportunities for folks that don't know about tech to learn about at least the hardware side of it.
That's a great idea, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of volunteers that a lot of the newer volunteers that we have at FGV are young, which is really great. I mean, they're kids that want to learn how things work, and this gives them the opportunity to do so.
Sure. So you guys do laptops, towers, mm-hmm. everything else, clean up monitors and keyboards,
laptops,
et cetera.
Desktops, monitors, every kind of peripheral you can think of. We also receive a good amount of...
Yeah, it's a little early.
Sleep's hard to find around here.
scarce resource.
Yeah. Audio
I got four
gear.
Last night.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Audio gear, video gear. We've received a lot of interesting stuff there. I mean, Vancouver is a movie production hub.
Without a doubt.
And it works, a media production hub, I should probably say. And it works both ways. I mean, we have productions come in that look for all kinds of esoteric items.
I was going to ask about that to use on site, to have in locations where they want something that's of a period that they're obviously basing the show or the film around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean,
so
do you
reserve equipment then for that specific purpose?
Oh, look, it's night. It's day.
Turn the lights back off. It was relaxing.
Amen to that.
It's just finding my zen.
So you hear the Z's.
Yes.
So we were talking about you reserving equipment for renting and
some equipment we have for rental or for usually that's some of the more esoteric stuff. I mean, we also get a lot of a surprising amount of antique hardware. I mean, for example, a week ago we were at an event. What is it? I'm trying to think what it expands to. For instance, a good number of listeners probably have some idea what Leidenus Tech Tips is.
Yeah, probably.
And they have an annual expo. We were there, and amongst other pieces of antique and vintage hardware, we had a WAS edition Apple II GS.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That
someone donated that?
Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
And we were demonstrating it using the traditional method of Oregon Trail.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And we had another one. We had a Model M keyboard from 1986.
Those are nice. Those are really nice.
I actually have a couple of shots of a couple of kids that they just saw this and honestly just seen their eyes pop open. And just that moment of awe that they have. Looking at this stuff, I mean, it reminds me of when I was that young and looking at it when it was, well, new.
Yeah. So you said that you have an outlet store, right, where you sell some of the equipment?
Yeah. Free Geek is a nonprofit. There is a difference between how nonprofits work in Canada and the U.S. And the U.S., pretty much every nonprofit is a charity, is a 501c3 or something connected or related to that, or at least is endeavoring to be that. While in Canada, there are more. It's not as easy to get charity status. In our case, our thrift store is pretty much where we get most of our operating revenue. I mean, we got to pay rent, we got to pay for internet.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. So since people are donating equipment to you and you have people who are volunteer that are reconditioning it, but you still have overhead, and I was going to ask how you guys support that side of it.
Yeah. In our case, I mean, our our thrift store is where we is what keeps the doors open. Now volunteers, for example. Pardon me. So many Z's floating around. We must have, I don't know. Our volunteers, for example, get significant discounts on what we have in store. And they also have the opportunity after a certain number of contributed hours of volunteering to get either a gift certificate for the store or a complete desktop computer system, something that'll let folks get online, do stuff that the vast majority of folks do. Web browsing, streaming video, office apps through something like LibreOffice, and we show folks how to use it. That's another a major part of our outreach is the use of free and open source software to keep these machines running longer, less overhead, don't have to pay ridiculous licensing fees just to have it burn in front of Bill Gates' tomb, simple stuff. And it demystifies some of this too. We get to show people, we use some of the more common distributions, some of the more popular ones, and we try and make it less scary for folks.
What's a typical installation when you're done? You mentioned that you use Linux, you're using LibreOffice. What other types of stuff do you normally put on them when you're reconditioning them and getting them ready for someone to use?
Most of our machines will run Ubuntu. Ubuntu, okay. We find it's approachable.
It's pretty user-friendly.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a scary OS, and not a scary distribution for folks that are not familiar with Linux. And what's great is we also have a weekly outreach night, open help night. People can bring whatever tech they got. Mm-hmm. And our volunteers, our staff will give it a crack to see what we can do to help.
Huh.
All kinds of problems come in the door that way. And it's yet another opportunity for outreach.
Without a doubt. So going back to the WAS. And since you guys have a store, do you have a museum there, so to speak? So when people come in addition to just looking at the items that you have available for sale, that maybe for a donation, they could take a look at some of your other, really juicy items?
Well, we have what we call the Museum of Obsolescence, where we...
I like the term.
Yeah, because, think about all the stuff that's been deprecated over the years... because of, as I put it before, the new shiny. You've got, for example, Walkmans, and, tape and portable tape and CD players. Those have been replaced. First, they were replaced by devices, by MP3 players like the iPod, and now pretty much everyone has a smartphone that can incorporate all of those functions, and of course that's like a repeating theme. Showing things like 8-inch floppy drives, CPU upgrades that were user installed back in the days, mm-hmm. things like the 5x86 chips. I'm trying to think what else is cool we got in there.
Have any 9-track tapes around?
No, but we do have. I'm trying to think what else we got in there right now. Certain like older. To older handheld electronic toys like that
Palms.
Old foot. Well, we don't have a Palm Pilot in there yet.
You don't.
But we do have.
Would you like a Palm Pilot?
I got
Pilot?
A Palm 5, yeah.
I have a Zire 71. It's just sitting in the closet.
I got a Palm V.
You'd be surprised. I actually ran across a couple of people that still use Palm Pilots.
I believe that.
Yeah. Things like an old 286 laptop. Back there are some of the ones that have that weird half LCD screen.
So is that open to the public for people to see?
During our operating hours, absolutely. Folks can come up and take a look. It's open. The Free Geek Vancouver is open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. And we encourage folks to come up. We regularly get folks from all across North America and occasionally from around the world to our office.
Sounds good. Yeah, next time I think instead of going to Stanley Park, I'm going to come over and visit you guys.
We're not that far away from Stanley Park.
That's good to know as well.
Easy to get there. One thing about us, we're one thing that I'm happiest about when it comes to working at Free Geek Vancouver is that we are very close to the poorest postcode in the entirety of Canada. I mean, it's ground zero for the opioid epidemic. It's ground zero for the housing crisis in Vancouver, and every day we help folks from that are in that in those unfortunate situations out.
Yeah, that's a great thing to
both
do.
Both directly through them volunteering, indirectly because a lot of the machines that we produce are given to charitable organizations, nonprofits, and other societies that focus on helping these disenfranchised communities.
Yeah, without a doubt, because I would imagine that at this point in time, most of the use in a public library is probably of the computer systems.
Yeah. There's two main uses that, public libraries are being stressed in ways that were never imagined because of access. It's one of the places where just about anybody can access tech. But again, you've got to use their computers. If you have your own, you can be there. You can access their Wi-Fi, which just about every library now has, and have a little bit more independence in this process. You don't have to worry about them. You don't have to worry as much about someone looking over your shoulder for whatever you're doing.
Yeah, without a doubt, because with the library computers, they're usually limited in the amount of time that you're allowed to use them because there's X number of people waiting to use them, and as you said, you have no idea what they're tracking or recording or anything on them, so if you have your own, you're definitely better off.
Right.
Yeah. That sounds great. I think it's really good. Are you associated with any other organizations that are doing the same thing across Canada or the U.S.?
Not at the moment. Free Geek is a... originally, Free Geek started in Portland. We refer to the Portland as the mothership, and the concept has spread from there. For example, there are Free Geek locations in Chicago, Toronto, in Arkansas, in Montreal, in Oslo, Norway. We agreed on the same basic ethos of ethical e-cycling and use of open source solutions when practical. But beyond that, each organization is distinct and discrete. We're not all we all operate under the same playbook, but we're not the same. And we're all basically the same team, but we're not all directly affiliated.
Sure, I understand. So when you mentioned earlier about the commercial e-recyclers, which are typically where I live, that's the only thing that's available. And at one point in time, one of them, there's three in my area, would actually allow you to purchase items, that they would receive in. That's new owner took over, and that has now stopped, everything they get. So the question that I'm headed with that is, you guys are looking to do something with used equipment, and you're more or less competing with commercial operations that are looking for that same source of material, but they're going to do something obviously completely different with it. So do you run into any conflictions with them that they're trying to stop things from getting to you or anything along those lines, that they're really looking, because they want the stuff to make money on it versus you who are looking to recycle it and give it back out to people for, for their own use?
Each jurisdiction has issues with this. In British Columbia, there is what's known as an eco fee that is charged on purchase of new electronics. And one of the unfortunate things is that as it's a place that's trying to reclaim stuff, we are not eligible to get that funding stream. Whereas the commercial operations that take items regardless of their functional state and simply crush them, or send them in a path to crush them, they get this fee. Which, again, it's something that frustrates us no end, because if you're trying to have a more ecological option, that whole, the you know, the credo of reduce, reuse, recycle, that's an order of operations, okay? That's not just supposed to be something that you just mindlessly repeat. I mean, reduce, you're supposed to, the first thing is reducing consumption. That's a little bit outside of our purview. But the next thing is to reuse stuff that works, because there's so much in terms of resources that goes into every piece of tech, whether you're talking about extraction of the raw materials, the processing of materials into the forms that are necessary for it to function. I mean, if you can keep that stuff going, you are saving tons of energy, you are saving tons of labor that otherwise just gets wasted when you take a board and basically pulp it for its precious metals.
Exactly.
Which, unfortunately, is the fate of a lot of these. I mean, a good number of organizations that are involved in this space, they offshore their quote-unquote recycling. They send it to, originally they sent it, good God. I'm running low on oxygen.
Must be the walls.
Yeah, it must be the walls. They're falling in on me. Until China closed its doors to this trade, I mean, a lot of it went to China. Now a lot of it's going to India and Bangladesh and other countries which have lax environmental and labor regs, where, you know, you find kids that are handling these potentially toxic items.
Mm-hmm.
And breathing in fumes with compounds we picked, some of us couldn't even pronounce while sober.
Good point.
Whereas, you know, one thing that we do, again, we are, when I talk about ethical e-cycling, in our case, none of the stuff that we receive, let's say we get something that's damaged beyond our ability to repair, all that stuff stays regional. I mean, we don't allow anything to go off the continent. If we found out that one of our downstream associates did that, we would cut them off in a New York minute.
Yep. So the commercial e-recyclers, they get paid per item, is that what you're saying, that yep. they accept?
Yeah, in at least in BC that's the case. Now again, this, every jurisdiction has its own laws and regs on this. I mean, there's a lot of places, an increasing number, where electronics need to be recycled and are not allowed in normal waste streams. And in those cases, I mean, the only revenue stream that a lot of these places get would be whatever they can reclaim in terms of metals. I mean, that's one advantage of the model that BC has. This is why, for example, of all the places in North America, BC is the only one that I'm aware of that didn't completely panic once China stopped accepting certain types of recyclable waste.
Yeah. Surprising that they won't actually consider you in the same vein and allow you to get that fee as well. That's very disappointing.
It's extremely disheartening, because what we're doing is more eco, if you will, than simply taking a 2-year-old piece of tech and, you know, smashing it for its bits.
But I have to say, it does remind me of a story that I heard of the British government. And have you ever heard the story about the British government who paid people in India to capture snakes?
I have not heard the story. And I would have wanted to hear this again anyway.
You've never heard it, but you want to hear it again. So, and obviously you have heard it.
I have not heard it, but
no, okay.
This sounds like a great...
So the British government was looking to get rid of snakes in India because they're obviously... They created a lot of problem with biting people and spreading diseases, etc. But in the end, what the British government discovered is that the people were actually raising snakes and then bringing them in to collect the money. So if I take a different view of what your business does, and if I was the BC government and I paid you to recycle a computer because somebody brought it to you, when they bring that computer back to you, I'm paying you multiple times for the same computer. So, yeah. But I understand your point. It would be very nice if, even if it was just a portion of that money that they helped contribute to you to keep that stuff, you know, from going into the wrong type of recycling, somebody just simply throwing it out in the trash, as well as the fact that you are providing a very valuable service to the community.
Yeah, and frankly, there is a right way, in my opinion, there is a right way and a wrong way to deal with old tech. The right way is to keep it running, to see how viable it is. Because, again, there's just so much that goes into every piece of tech. Even the booms that are in this studio, which are basically dumb pieces of metal, have a lot of resources that go into it. Okay, so if one of these screw locks goes bad, what's the right thing to do? Do you simply toss the entire thing because of one small component, or do you try and replace that component? When I describe that, I mean, pretty much everyone will say, "Oh, it's just a screw. It's just a small piece of metal. Let's replace that." But most people look at computers or other pieces of tech. It's like, "Oh no, it's bad. What? Some small component went bad, and it. Whoops! Time to get a new one."
Well, part of that goes into something you had commented about as well, is that the computers with the replaceable CPUs. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, computers nowadays really are designed to be non-user serviceable. And that is a concern, you know. I mean, it would be much easier if they were manufactured the way they used to be. I know it's not as cost efficient, and certainly they're not as light. They're not as, you know, cute and good looking and all the other things that everybody wants nowadays. But it does extend the life of them. There's no two ways about that. So when you mentioned that you sometimes receive computers that are unrepairable, and then when we were talking about e-recycling as well, you had mentioned about downstream partners that you have. Mm-hmm. So I presume that means that you try to salvage whatever parts that you can to reuse and save for spares or whatever the case may be for next ones, and that at some point, some things need to go. It's just beyond what you're going to be able to reuse. And you have a partner that you work with to make sure that those are obviously taken care of the right way?
Yes. I mean, we're a fairly small operation. I mean, we don't have access. We don't have our own, say, smelting facilities or...
That's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, or other such operation to safely dispose of items that are beyond our abilities to salvage. Mm-hmm. We do audit our downstream partners, make sure that they are acting with the same kind of ethics that we have. Because, look, when it comes to e-waste, it's our mess. We should be the ones cleaning it up. We shouldn't be punting it to others.
I agree. That extends not only to computers, to other things, but mm-hmm. sadly... Yeah. Not everybody seems to have that approach to it.
Yeah.
It is.
It's unfortunate that, you know, that there isn't, you know, this a greater recognition of how much waste is being produced, how much waste can be reduced by simple steps.
Yeah, without a doubt. And actually, the one e-recycler that I had mentioned that no longer allows me to go in there and go through their stuff, I've discovered after... When I used to go there, I got to know one of the people who worked there pretty well. And I talked to him later on outside of work because, you know, sometimes you just can't say what you're thinking when you're at work. And he mentioned to me that the person who bought it was actually someone who owns a couple of different computer stores and runs an operation on eBay. So all of the items that I used to go in there to look for and that they used to stock up and just save for people to walk in off the street are now being sold in computer stores and on eBay. So basically they bought it as an e-recycle. You drop it off for free, they're going to turn around and make money on it.
Right.
And not that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, because that is in a way recycling some of the equipment. It's just the sad thing is that they've decided, or at least the current owner has decided, to make it so commercial that it's just difficult now for people like me that still have older computers sitting around that need an oddball thing to find it. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah, we try and help folks out that are looking for unusual bits, be it somebody with an old, unusual computer, or if it's a production that's looking for a certain look or something that, so let's put it, something that, let's say the detail-oriented fans of theirs desperately want to determine what it is.
Yeah, without a doubt, because as a matter of fact, I was talking to Bubbles the other day, and my basement kind of looks like an e-recycling, you know. I've got everything back from the old Apple Power PCs, a G5 tower sitting in my basement, and all kinds of stuff. And not that I use any of them, but they all work 100%, and I just can't part with them to have them recycled.
Right.
And unfortunately, nobody really wants them. They're like, oh, nobody wants a Power PC. There's no software made for them anymore and stuff. And I've got all kinds of other equipment that's kind of that vintage as well, that's all down there. And I can't part with it anymore.
No, and I understand. I mean, heck, before I moved, I had a room that was similarly packed with kit. Various motherboards, screens, components, you name it. The only reason I don't have that now is because now I live in a place that is smaller than this studio and costs me about $3,000 a month.
Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a shame. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, when computers were first around, when we were back in the VIC-20s and the Commodore 128 era and stuff, nobody really thought of any of these things back then about what we were going to do with them for recycling them. And quite honestly, I have to admit that I was caught up in that new and shiny and stuff kind of process as well, and especially now that I look at, now that we've got computer museums and places where they're looking for some of these items, because they're historical facts, you know, of how we've gotten to be where we are today, that I think back of a lot of the things that I had that I threw away. And when I say threw away, I mean that's where they went. They just went in a trash can, and I'm sure they got into a landfill somewhere, and so they were never recycled. And worst of all, some of them were actually prototypes from various computer manufacturers that I worked for. That some of these guys at these computer museums, that's the exact response I get from when I talk to people at different computer museums. And it's like, well, you know, we didn't think of that at the time. That's why when I asked you about 9-track tapes, I mean, I used to have 9-track tapes in my closet stacked up that we used to run at the one place I worked on the VAXs after hours.
Yeah, that reminds me of...
They're gone.
Yeah, I was at Tour Camp, which is a North American hacker camp, a month ago, and some folks from the from a vintage computing museum in Seattle brought in a half a dozen different vintage items, VT-100, digital terminals. There was a AT&T 5796 terminal, if I remember correctly, and they were all connected to a VAX 11 that was running BSD 4.2.
Yeah.
And they were all connected over analog phone lines.
Yeah, ours.
And it was fun to see this. And I mean, there's a lack of history that we have in US society in general, but also in the hacker community in specific. Because when you look at a lot of the technologies that we're using now, we've been reinventing the wheel so many times.
And so fast.
Yes. I mean, consider that in 1979, there was a full GUI that pretty much anybody listening to this would be able to recognize as, you know, a fully functional GUI that does everything that modern GUIs would do. And it was only in 10,000 lines of code. I mean, that's insane efficiency. Now 10,000 lines of code will not register 3 keystrokes.
Has something to do with the amount of memory we have now compared to back then.
True.
You know, and it is true. As someone who, in a former life, used to be a programmer as well, you know, I'm sure that the current generation of programmers would not like to hear it, but they're just not as good. You know, they rely a lot more, I think, on tools to do the compiling and do everything for them. And unfortunately, when you have a lot of memory, you don't have to be quite as efficient as you used to. You don't notice it in today's computers, and you know, certainly on my desk at home are all modern computers, so I'm just as guilty of it as anyone else. But I still have a place in my heart for the old ones, and obviously still have a place in my basement for them also. They all live there. So for the people listening, are there any websites or any places that they can go online to see if there's anything in their area that they could get involved, either in volunteering or a place to, you know, turn in some of their old equipment as they recycle it and turn it over?
Well, a good place to start is with the mothership in Portland. Freegeek.org is their website. They do encourage, and they want more entities like them to come into existence, because it's more than simply about recycling the tech in a responsible manner. It's also about helping the community. The website for Free Geek Vancouver is, I'm guessing this is going to be a shock to people, freegeekvancouver.org. Chicago's, I know it's freegeekchicago.org.
Seems to be a pattern developing here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Free Geek Portland, you know, they basically ask for entities that want to come up. I mean, look, if you don't have one of these, a Free Geek in your area or an organization like Free Geek, start one. There's nothing stopping you. And it's how you get, and it's the way to get started. There are so many people that I ran across. I ran across folks from Colorado, from Southern California, from Belgium, from the UK, that saw what we did and what we did and what we do. And they're like, gods, I wish there was an organization like this in my area. And the simple answer is, start one. I mean, there's so much electronic waste out there, at least what people perceive of as waste out there. You'd be shocked at what people would be willing to contribute to you. I mean, from vintage to Apple II products to, heck, I mean, I think the newest thing that I've seen come in the door was like a sixth generation i5.
Wow.
I mean, and that's, what, barely 3 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We get all kinds of monitors, all kinds of printers, all kinds of systems from, like, you know, basic office systems that we get en masse from institutional donors to these just, like, shocking gaming rigs. I mean, it's amazing what people are willing to, what people have and what they're willing to contribute to you in a structure like this, especially if you're in the U.S. where starting up a nonprofit that's tax deductible is a lot easier. Okay.
Definitely is. When you mentioned about an idea or a question, I guess, that I have, when you mentioned about people coming and learning some of this, have you guys explored the avenue of partnering with any educational facilities?
We actually do partner with a good number of educational facilities. The, for example, one thing in BC, and this is a trend I've noticed in the U.S. as well, is that there's a community service requirement of students.
Sure.
To graduate, and we help these help youth get that requirement done. But we also work with entities like WorkBC, like employment organizations, to help with skills training. Because, I mean, what skills are folks learning? They are learning about the hardware side of tech. They're learning how it gets put together and how it comes apart. They're learning how to test it for its ability, which is, again, that's a skill that everybody that's listening to this pretty much is probably going to take for granted. But again, you've got folks that have not spent their life in front of a keyboard like we have.
No, that's true. There's no two ways about it. I know I've got a couple nieces and nephews who I think are about the age where they should be starting now with something more than an iPad. You know, and that's one of the reasons that I still have a lot of my old tech in the basement was the hope of trying to give it to them. I won't say offload it, but give it to them so that they could start experimenting with it, you know, installing Linux on it, taking it apart, figuring out how this goes in, what that does, and et cetera. And, you know, that generation doesn't seem all that interested in it. They are really definitely into the buy it off the shelf and just away you go.
The love of exploration is something that kind of has to be instilled.
I think so.
It is, again, we're in a society where it's just a lot easier to pull down the shiny and distract with it. Honestly, one thing is, like, I do want kids to learn how tech works, starting from white text on a black screen. Because it's about, I like demystifying. And when you show them the actual magic behind the curtain, most are much more impressed than by simply having some blinking, flashing object.
Yeah.
I mean, think of it similar to how, you know, a lot of us probably were interested in magic back in the day, and, you know, and did learning how the trick worked, what did that do to you? Did you just become disappointed by it, or did you become fascinated by the process that it took to come up with that? I mean, as hackers, I mean, I think that most of us would fall into the latter, where we see how the trick works, and we are fascinated by how simple or how complex it was, what it took to come up with it. And that's the same sort of love we have of technology. We are fascinated by how it comes together.
Yeah, without a doubt. So would you say that you have more equipment than you have people to recycle it, or do you have more people? Or do you have more people? Do you have a shortage in one area or the other?
Main place where we're hurting is for space. I mean, if we had more space, we'd be able to take on more volunteers at a time. Because we do get a pretty good, healthy stream of contributions in. We do regular e-waste drives in connection with the city of Vancouver, and increasingly with the other municipalities in the Metro Vancouver area. We are working on partnerships with libraries, with some of the cities on Vancouver Island, which is, from what I've been able to see, the places we're looking at working with are about 60 miles away from us. I mean, we want to expand our service area in terms of collections and in terms of outreach. I mean, granted, thanks to exposure that we've received from a bunch of YouTubers, in particular, it's easy to make the case that Vancouver's Free Geek operation is the second most famous behind, of course, the Mothership. So we get folks coming in from all over the continent, all over the world. Wow. Which, I mean, I'm constantly shocked when we're
maybe they're coming for your museum. Now that I know that you've got the WAS, you know I'm coming there, right?
Unfortunately, the WAS
here we go.
Hey, look, we got to keep the doors open.
Yes, we do.
Had somebody that was willing to acquire it off of us for a reasonable price, and
good for you.
Look, capitalism still got a capitalism.
That's true. You still got to pay the bills, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
So, if you want to find out about us, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, in terms of Free Geek in general, you can find a lot of videos about it on YouTube. Just search for Free Geek. Free as in no cost. Geek as in what we all are. Our websites, start with the mothership at freegeek.org for Portland, freegeekvancouver.org for Vancouver, freegeekchicago for Chicago, and there are other Free Geeks across the continent and around the world that you can look up. If there isn't an ethical e-cycler near you, there is nothing stopping you from starting one up, even if you do have a day job that has you coding for 60 hours or more a week. There are a lot of like-minded people out there who, when you tell them this problem, they want to be part of the solution.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I would imagine there's a lot of people listening who are doing this on their side anyway. I mean, they're sitting there swapping out this part, changing that, upgrading their computers and stuff. So
yeah, it's just usually for that person, your next door neighbor who's like, oh, you do computers, can you fix them? Mm-hmm. Can you fix my stuff?
Yeah.
This would just be on a bigger scale.
Yeah, because again, there are still a lot of folks out there that cannot access tech, and that's our main focus, is helping people that otherwise can't get tech have access.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to do, without a doubt. Do you partner with anybody, for example, people who offer training to maybe the elderly or people who are not computer aware or literate?
We work with a lot of nonprofits and charities in Vancouver, particularly focusing on the downtown east side. For those of who don't know Vancouver geography, the downtown east side is basically the epicenter of the homelessness and opioid and poverty crises in Canada. So we help folks that are in some of the worst socioeconomic situations, getting them computers, getting them with organizations that have these machines so that they can, you know, at a minimum be able to interact with their government as they need to for various benefits, for educational opportunities.
That's a very valuable service.
Yeah, it really is.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, that's why I do love my job, because of this. I mean, it's, you know, it's a way to help. Yeah. And
I was going to say, if anybody listening that's in the Vancouver area and has got a bunch of free time, or just a little bit of free time.
Or if you've got a bunch of old tech.
There you go.
It's time to clean out that closet.
Or if somebody's going from where I live to Vancouver and wants to take all my stuff with them.
We'll be glad to take it off your hands. Yeah. You'd be surprised how many people we know that love old G5s.
Now, I would imagine, but I'm not going to deal with border crossing. Somebody else wants to drive it across. That's up to them.
Oh, God. That's all. Borders are fun.
They are. I remember the last time I crossed, the guy asked me. I was gone for work, but I was only gone for meetings. And I drive, and I'm driving my own car, which is a 91. So, you know, I'm crossing the border, and the guy asked me, he says, "Do you have any tools in the trunk?" Because I was gone for work. And I said, "Of course I do." And he goes, "Oh, well, what kind of tools do you have?" And I said, "It was like crescent wrenches and hammers and screwdrivers." I go, "What kind of tools are you looking for?" He goes, "Oh, I thought you maybe had tools related to your work." I go, "No." I said, "Dude, this is a 91 car with 340,000 miles." I go, I don't travel without tools.
Well, I mean, cars are actually a pretty good metaphor for this, because a lot of people will take... I mean, if you've got a car that has a component that goes bad, what are you doing with it? I mean, the vast majority of people are going to do what they can to keep it running. What's the difference between doing that and doing that with technology? Okay, the size of the component usually, and sometimes the price of it. But I mean, it's about keeping it running.
It really is.
Yeah,
I agree. That's why everybody's got some old stuff down in their base. Well, not everybody, but a lot of us
do. A lot
of
people do. How are you doing on time? It's 11 a.m., a little bit past now. Do you have more time for us, or do you need to get going?
I do need to get going, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, we're glad that you were able to come here and be with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you. Thank you very much.
And again, I encourage folks to look up Free Geek to find out more about what the Free Geek as an idea is all about.
One last question. Is there, like... Let's say somebody wants to find if there's a local Free Geek near them. What's the easiest way for somebody to find where there are chapters located?
Start with just a search for Free Geek and wherever you are, city or even state. Also, visiting the mothership, freegeek.org. They have had in the past like lists of Free Geek affiliated organizations. They also are where you would find the basics about what an organization would need to do in order to be a Free Geek, or at least a Free Geek affiliated organization.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming down, and have a wonderful rest of your hope.
Thank you. I hope everyone here has a good rest of the hope, too.
I think they will.